Welcome back, Power Hour Nation. I'm your guest host from Canada, George Freund. Joining us for this magical mystery tour hour is going to be Stephen Nubaney, who is authoring the Who Murdered book series. And I'll tell you something. There's nothing like looking at a cold case where the narrative has gone down the memory hole and new evidence that wasn't in the narrative is dug up, exposed, and presented so that you can have a better understanding on how the game of world global domination is played and actually get a front seat to make it better. And he does very good work and quick, easy-to-read books that I think you'll just find absolutely amazing. Welcome aboard, Steve. Tell us a little bit about yourself and where we can find this treasure trove of information.
Well, I first want to say thanks very much for having me on your show, George. It's an honor. I think there's a handful of people who are at the top of their game, and I think you're in that. I think it's really an honor to be on your show. You're one of the best servants. People can learn about this book. They can buy this book. I just recently dropped the prices because of the COVID-19 thing. They can go to my website, whobooks.com. All lowercase, one word, whomurderedbooks.com, and they can order the book there and learn a little bit more about it. A little bit about me. I'm one of these people who things aren't right and say they're right. I have my own mind, and there are things that when I went through college and I went through high school and so forth, you had to write down what the professors and the teachers wanted to get a passing grade, but some of the things I never believed. This is the vanguard of one of them. I never thought or believed that FDR died of natural causes at the same time Allied troops were storming Hitler's bunker. I thought it should be taken out of the history books and put right next to Grimm's fairy tales. I also thought that FDR, Mussolini, and Hitler dying within 18 days of each other was equally suspicious. And, you know, you get 70 years past now, 70 plus years past, and you can go back and you can, you know, we have deathbed confessions and we have documents that have been declassified and we can actually piece this together. And what I found so amazing about this is that when FDR's doctors were baffled because his body wasn't responding to the medicines that they were giving him, he would go on the couch to near death after mealtimes, which is a little suspicious in itself, to, you know, bipolar, completely the other side, he'd be in vibrant health. And no matter what they gave him, his body wasn't responding to it. So they took him to Dr. Frank Leahy in July of 1944 after they were completely baffled. And he does this law in his letter, his summary letter is out there and was released by the History Channel in 2011, April 12th, 2011, actually. And the laundry list of effects and symptoms and things that FDR had didn't align with the advance of polio. They aligned with the advance of poisoning. But it was a poisoning that we didn't understand here in this hemisphere yet. I won't give the poisoning substance away. I'll save that for the book because it's a hell of a book. They knew in Europe. They had already banned this substance in Europe in 1922. They already knew. They were way ahead of us. Those countries in Europe are older than we are here in America. So they had a little jump on some of the knowledge. They knew all about this. They knew about the effects. They knew about everything to do with it. We didn't know anything about it. So the reason why they couldn't detect it is because the information and knowledge just wasn't there to detect it. So it was an interesting 2.5 year research project. That much I can tell you. And you know, Eleanor Roosevelt herself got to the point where she got so tired of hearing the whisperings around Washington and in her circle that, you know, FDR was poisoned, FDR was poisoned, FDR was poisoned. And, you know, she had good reason to suspect this. There were all kinds of mysterious poisonings happening around FDR in his inner circle that created cerebral hemorrhages. He did die of a cerebral hemorrhage, but it was not due to natural causes. Major General Pa Watson, 61 years old, on the ship back from the Alta Conference, died of a cerebral hemorrhage. FDR's secretary, Marvin McIntyre, died in 1943 of a cerebral hemorrhage. And, of course, FDR dies of a cerebral hemorrhage. Stalin dies of a cerebral hemorrhage. You know, it's getting a little goofy here. This is a little too coincidental. So 1957 rolls around. Of course, FDR is long dead at this point. And Eleanor Roosevelt's tired of hearing it. So she hires a private investigator to look into his documents, to find out his medical records and his documents, to find out and do a cold case analyzation of what really happened. Well, he gets a runaround by the Surgeon General and others for about 4 months. Finally, someone has to come and tell him that all of FDR's health documents have been stolen from a locked file in Bethesda. So if you go that far, you've already got a conspiracy on your hands. So in the time that FDR dies, it was 69 hours from death to grave. They couldn't get this guy in the ground fast enough. They didn't want any questions. And, of course, he's buried at Hyde Park, New York, which is federal ground, under a concrete slab, and no one's exhuming him. You know, it's funny how people who I write about, I have three subjects I'm writing about, but the two books that I have out, one is part one for Elvis Presley and part two for Elvis Presley. He was another one who's buried under a concrete slab who died mysteriously. They kind of on federal ground now. You know, that's a national landmark. You're not getting the answers from. So when deathbed confessions come out and when documents are released, people like me go back and we piece together the snippets of what really happened. One of my greatest suspicions was confirmed. I knew all along that he was being poisoned, but just by the symptoms, that what we know now wouldn't have happened. FDR died in the presence of two Russian spies. She was painting a portrait. Her name was Elizabeth Shumatov. And she had, she was a defected Russian with her husband, who was sent here on a mission from the Russian government, and they moved all over Western New York and upstate New York, and he went to work for another Russian, the Sigorsky Aviation Corporation. She was a painter, and she was painting the elite of people, and she had been in the company of the people who absolutely hated FDR. Not everyone loved him. She was painting the DuPonts and the Firestones and Henry Ford and, you know, the Heinz family, all of these people who were losing a tremendous fortune because of the socialist programs that FDR had in play. And they would have loved president. So the book goes down that rabbit hole as well. I really came to the suspicion that FDR was murdered. And every now and then you get lucky, and I got lucky with this. I found a quote from his favorite cousin, Daisy Suckley, Margaret Daisy Suckley, in her now-published diary is entitled Closest Companion. And on page 203, this is a book you got to read this book. The stuff that I come up with was just amazing. She's commenting to Dr. McIntyre, FDR's doctor. And I'll read you the comment. It's the president's fourth day in bed. He still feels somewhat miserable, although his fever is gone. Very telling sentence coming up. Last Tuesday, without any warning, he felt ill at noon, also known as lunchtime. And he lay on the sofa until about 4:30 p.m. when the doctor found he had a temperature of 102. The doctor, parentheses, McIntyre, found it was a toxic poisoning, but they couldn't ascribe anything to it. The doctor just admitted this man was being poisoned. They have no idea. They were trying to treat him with sulfa drugs. If they knew then what we know today, they would have known that the president was being poisoned right there at mealtimes. And it was someone in the White House who had exposure to many, many trips back and forth to Europe, who was in on the plot to kill the president. You know, not everybody loved FDR. He was a big hero because, you know, gee, I give people free money and they tend to like it. You know, imagine that. But, you know, it was also a very controlled media. They just loved this guy, and you know, the media was at his bidding, quite opposite of what's happening today. And they concealed certain things. A lot of them were the people who just loathed this guy. You know, he was killing the stock market. He was just doing all kinds of things that a capitalist would just groan over. And another person who obviously didn't like him was the murder attempt that happened on FDR years prior. George, what's this guy's name? The guy who tried to shoot
FDR. I can look it up quickly here. Let me see.
His name is escaping me. He was a bricklayer, and he was an Italian fella, and I can't think of his last name for the life of me at the moment.
Well, but it was a very interesting, because he was president-elect at the time. And he was traveling to Florida, and as I recall, he shot the mayor of Chicago and killed him. And FDR was in his car. It's an open-top car. Giuseppe Zangara.
There you go.
Actually, the funny thing about Giuseppe is he looks like my boss. If you put him in a suit and sent him back down there, he'd probably be, you know, cooking his heels in prison or something. But, you know, has a great similarity to him. But one thing looking into that was Anton Cermak, the mayor of Chicago, who was killed. But I really marvel at FDR because he didn't panic. And, you know, he took the wounded mayor into the limousine and such like that. You know, if he would have been around when Kennedy was shot, he probably would have done the same thing. Slap the driver in the head, step on the gas, and get out of the way. Like, he just seemed to be, you know, I'm taking care of the situation kind of guy. And, you know, I really respected him for that when I reviewed that assassination attempt, just to think that, you know, He wasn't some type of droid or anything like that. He was in command of his circumstances at the top of his game, and he's got crippled legs. So, you know, that even puts him more on my list of saying, pretty cool guy.
Yeah, this guy was really a remarkable human being. If you haven't been to Hyde Park, New York, to see his mansion and whatnot and the museum and things, I suggest everyone go. It just, I don't know, a year or two ago, it just underwent a $32 million renovation. And it's really well done. I had to go there because, well, for research reasons. Above the museum is the FDR National Archive, which I changed my residence there for a little while. I was doing so much work and research there. And they're incredibly cooperative people. Run by great people. You have the chance to go. FDR came out of probably one of the most, if not the most, wealthy families in the country at the time. I mean, I'm talking old wealth. You know, most people were bringing home, you know, a pittance of a paycheck. And, you know, here he has this, he's raised in this wonderful mansion about a quarter mile down the road from the Vanderbilts. This is the old guard money. And, it's really interesting to see, you know, where he came from and what he did. And speaking about the courageous person, this is not an anti-FDR book. It's just not. It tells the truth. It tells both sides. And one of the things that I put in the book that I'm in such admiration of this person, he gets infantile paralysis. Can't move his legs. Can't move his arms. I don't know how he didn't end up in an iron lung. I just can't imagine how this happened. Came on suddenly. He managed to, he had bars put in over his bed at the mansion, and he managed to get his arms back, and he was doing chin-ups in bed, had no use of his arms. So here's this guy with 10 or 12 pound metal leg braces. Now he's out of politics right now. He fell completely off the landscape. People thought he was done because of this affliction, because back then, They thought if there was something wrong with your body, there was something wrong with your mind. So this was everything to him. You know, he really wanted to get back into politics and fulfill his calling. So this guy would go walking, quote unquote, walking every day. What he did for walking was use crutches under each arm and drag his legs behind him, one at a time, trying to get them to move and to walk. And he would do miles of this every day. You know, I mean, this is quite a courageous guy. This is, you know, my respect level went off the charts when I heard that. Of course, he never regained the use of his legs, but it certainly wasn't for lack of trying. This is a very interesting, multifaceted guy. So people ask me all the time, you know, who would want to kill FDR? You know, why? Who would have been around him? Well, there's a number of people who were around this person that were infiltrated by the Nazis and or other communists, and we know now that a tremendous amount of people had communists had infiltrated. Oh, everything from Harry Dexter White to Alger Hiss and all points in between. We know this now. We didn't know that then. I'll just read you a brief list of the governmental agencies that we now know were infiltrated. The Agricultural Adjustment Administration, the Attorney General's Office, the Department of State, the National Labor Relations Board, the Labor Advisory Board, the War Production Board, I'm almost done, the Price Administration Department, the U.S. Department of Treasury. They had communists running the Treasury Department and the Public Welfare Committee. So I have to kind of earmark this just a little bit because there were a lot of communists. You know, FDR was very communist friendly. But I have to put that in perspective because communism was not the evil empire thing that, you know, we later found out that it had the propensity to be. It was contrived from the college professors, a new system of government where there were no peaks and falls of capitalism. Everyone was cared for unconditionally, cradle to grave. And of course, Stalin was extending, he was pushing this, and he was extending invitations to those in academia, to those in media, to those in the news, to those in Hollywood, to come over and look at this new marvel, this new way of doing things. So they took the invitation and they went over and they were treated like royalty, and what Stalin showed them was basically a Potemkin village. Villages that were just there for show. Some of them were made of cardboard, and they looked like little Disney World spectacles. This is what communism is. Shouldn't you want this in America? This and that and the other thing. It was the ultimate in propaganda. So when these people's stay ended, he sent them back with packets to, you know, how to transform your country into this wonderful thing that we have called communism. They didn't know they were doing anything wrong. They didn't know that how it could blow up. They didn't know they were being deceived. So, of course, Stalin, the puppet master, who's probably the greatest megalomaniac in history, was pulling the strings from the inside, from the outside in. Stalin had more spies around FDR than FDR could probably count. When they went to Yalta and the Tehran conference, Stalin knew more about FDR than FDR did. He knew everything that was going on. And Stalin was pretty good at this. He had an advisor who was very, very Stalin friendly named Henry Hopkins, who would go back and forth to visit Stalin and other places to be his right-hand man, FDR's right-hand man, because FDR had, you know, it's a little hard to travel freely in a wheelchair. And Harry Hopkins was later, he was a friend of the family who Eleanor Roosevelt had met through the CPUSA, the Communist Party of the United States of America, which is still in existence, by the way. Go to their website and tell me what political line they're pushing. You won't believe it. But Eleanor Roosevelt was a big friend of the CPUSA in New York City. Harry Hopkins, that's where she met Harry Hopkins. Harry Hopkins was fundamental in crafting the New Deal with FDR. So he was the perfect person for him to trust to fly overseas and all over the place and be his right-hand man. Unfortunately, decades later, a KBG defector, his name is Oleg, and there's no way I'm pronouncing his last name, identified Harry Hopkins as the mysterious Agent 19 who was handing over all the information on the atomic bomb and all these projects that were going on. So we had been very infiltrated. And a lot of these people didn't necessarily, they thought that Stalin could run America better than FDR ran America. And although FDR was very, very friendly to Stalin, they were at cross purposes on one thing. When the war ended, FDR was trying to propose the replacement of the world. They could all rule their own little section, and this great war would never happen again. And those people were the United States, Great Britain, China, and the Soviet Union. Sounds great. Didn't sound great to Stalin. Stalin didn't want to split the world with FDR. He wanted to rule the world. He wanted to...
Okay, we're coming up for the break, so, you know, that was an old song, Everybody Wants to Rule the World or something like that. Nada. We the people rule the world. So we'll see you on the other side with Steve Eubany, and we're going to look into FDR's tragic demise. Thanks for coming out.
As you all know, everything begins with an idea. Ideas have helped shape the very world we live in. ThePowerMall.com began as an idea, allowing entrepreneurs and small business owners like yourself the opportunity to not only survive, but thrive in an era where corporations dominate. ThePowerMall.com is a small family-owned business who has partnered with companies you've come to rely on and trust over the years, like Strauss Heart Drops, North American Urban Spice, Miracle 2 Soaps, Vitamir, Numana Food Storage, to name just a few. Fight back against large corporations when you buy from thepowermall.com. Need to speak to a real person? Call Jay at thepowermall.com and receive superior customer service. Call 1-877-817-9829 right now. That number again is 1-877-817-9829. Support small businesses and buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.
Break the bond to Big Pharma. Hi, it's Joyce Riley with the Power Hour to tell you about the powerful benefits of Strauss Heart Drops. Many people today are locked into the routine of taking multiple prescription drugs. Strauss Herb Company believes that everything the body needs is provided by nature. Strauss Heart Drops may clear congested arteries, restore damaged muscle, maintain healthy cholesterol levels, and flush toxins and metals from the body. They may even be helpful in treating varicose veins. And unlike prescription drugs that are packed with chemicals, Strauss Heart Drops are 100% natural and harness the healing power of herbs like garlic, cayenne, white willow bark, and mistletoe. For the full line of Strauss products, I urge you to call the Power Hour at 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Or visit thepowermall.com. And remember, beware of knockoffs. Get the original. Get Strauss Heart Drops.
Boost your immune system naturally this year with oil of oregano, a potent germ killer. This is the true wild oregano oil P73, a blend of edible spices of wild oregano grown on natural mineral-rich soils. Research published in the International Journal of Food Microbiology found that oil of oregano is an excellent germicide capable of killing a wide range of fungi and bacteria. Get it today by visiting thepowermall.com or calling 877-817-9829.
Hi, this is Catherine at the Power Hour. The Power Mall began when Joyce Riley discovered an all-natural soap that heals skin issues and can replace your bathing, laundry, and household cleaning products. That soap is Miracle 2 and is made from natural minerals and coconut extract with no added fragrances or colors and is naturally concentrated and biodegradable. I guarantee after you discover how amazing Miracle 2 products are, you'll recommend them to everyone you know. To order, call 877-817-9829 or visit thepowermall.com today. You'll learn why so many people say, it's not just soap, it's a miracle.
With dozens of food storage companies buying up airtime all over radio, it's hard for you to know which company you can actually trust. Humana Food Storage is nutritious, is GMO-free, contains no aspartame, no high fructose corn syrup, has no chemicals, preservatives, or soy. And Humana Food Storage has a 25-year shelf life. Call Jay at 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Or order online at thepowermall.com.
America made. Good for you. Food stores, I love to eat. Yum.
We've all heard about antibiotics, but what about probiotics? Antibiotic means against life. Probiotic means pro-life. Antibiotics kill bacteria that are infectious and harmful to the body. They also kill the good bacteria, though, that are necessary for good health. Probiotics from Living Streams replaces the healthy balance of friendly bacteria and normalizes the digestive tract. Gastritis, ulcers, diarrheal disease is just a few of the problems people develop when the intestinal flora is out of balance. Living Streams probiotics create the healthy balance needed for good digestion, suppresses growth of pathogenic bacteria, and actually increases resistance to infection. Call the Power Hour, 877-817-9829. Order your Living Stream probiotics today. They're available in 2, 4, and 8-ounce bottles, and Living Streams probiotics comes with a money-back guarantee. Get your body back in balance with Living Streams probiotics today. 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Living Streams Probiotics. Everyone should be pro-life.
Welcome back, Power Hour Nation. We're putting on our Sherlock Holmes detective caps, lighting our pipe, and doing something they used to do in the 19th century called deductive reasoning. And then for reasons that are understood but not explained, they invented another terminology for that called conspiracy theory to make it look like deductive reasoning is all wet. Where in reality, no. This is the way you should be working on things, is to think, analyze, check data, and start to put the pieces together in a big puzzle. When the mainstream media, the state, when they put together a puzzle, it's got gaping holes in it, and they just smash the other pieces together to say, this is the picture. And every time I talk to Steve, I make cheat notes because, you know, he reminds me of something else and something else and something else and something else and something else that is down my own personal memory hole. But, you know, one of the big ones is, you know, we had a painter back then, but in another era, we had a photographer, and that one just blew me away when the fellow who took the falling man shot from 9/11 was also at the Robert Kennedy assassination and took pictures of him on the floor. And I think his statement was his only regret was, you know, he didn't have a flash or something like that, or, you know, something about his camera anyway. And yeah, that's it. I regret I didn't have a flash, he said. And to me it was, I regret I didn't have a pump-action shotgun to blow that mother right across the wall and say, Bobby, that would be my regret, or tackle him to the ground and cover his body so they couldn't shoot him. FDR probably would have done it with, you know, his 10-pound weights around his legs. And so I found that absolutely flabbergasting. But, you know, there we go. We have someone in critical times, critical spaces at the same time, and sometimes you got to scratch your head and realize there's not an echo inside. It's just the gears turning. And, you know, you look at this media and how they manipulate us, and they manipulated us for FDR, too, is they never really showed him the way he was. It was the open conspiracy that he's in a wheelchair. And they covered that up for a long time, that you can't see him the way he is. And this is a lie. It's like I said in the beginning part about that Dance of Deception book. Not telling the truth is the same as lying. Once they realize they got you and they can manipulate you and control you, it's just child's play to keep going. They're never going to let up. They just keep doing it more and more and more and more. And, you know, we look at what FDR went through with, you know, a million communists in his office. Trump's under the same gun with a million people he probably doesn't trust. Heads of various departments, you know, close up personal people in this regard, that regard. You're in enemy territory in your own home while you're in the White House. And you're looking over your shoulder all the time about, you know, what's up, who's giving away this, who's giving away that. And in some respects, after I read your book, Steve, I started to come to the conclusion that FDR was faking his leftist leans. Because he got along with Churchill for so long, who was a staunch anti-communist, and that he was playing the game because he knows he's got all these spies. So you might as well pretend you're on their side and worm your way in like a counterintelligence agent. And then you don't spring your trap until it's absolutely necessary, if at all. So that
FDR was funny about the people listening to this interview. They were deprived of the conversations that we have had in the past and we had during the break, which was incredible. And we're going to bring out as much as we can in the time allotment that we have. The parallels between the Trump administration and what's going on today. People say, Steve, why does this matter? It was 75 years ago or 80 years ago or whatever. It matters because it's happening now. And here's some of the parallels between the Trump administration and what's going on now. They have spies all around Trump, and he's firing them as soon as he can find them. Love the guy or hate the guy, these are facts, and this is what's happening. I'm not trying to get political, and I don't care how you vote. I don't care if you vote. You do your conscience, okay? I'm just going to give you the rundown. So they both were surrounded by spies for the opposition, or what they deemed to be the opposition. FDR took his message directly to the people and with the medium of the day. You know, people, when he died, it was so powerful to hear directly from the president. You know, in a day when the radio was a piece of furniture the size of a dishwasher or bigger that would be in the living room and the entire family would gather around it. So FDR was taking his message directly to the people. And Trump is doing the same thing, only he's using Twitter, going directly to the people, bypassing the media, just like FDR did. The parallels are creepy. They were both loathed by the other party. FDR was absolutely loathed by anyone who wanted to make money or anyone who wanted to have anything to do with conservative or Republican politics. He was giving these people fits, and he was one of these people who was going to get his way. When the New Deal kind of worked, I can't say it was a smashing success, and he was ready to pack and do another New Deal, they deemed most of it unconstitutional, and he was going to get his way, so he decided to pack the court and add some new judges to get his way, or additional judges. Trump's the exact same way. Trump is loathed by the other side, and they've called this guy everything but a white guy, I think, at this point. And you know, he's doing the same thing. Trump is very dogged to get his way. He's going to get his way or he's going to die trying. So these two are similar in some ways, very different in others, different in thought and ideology. But the style is new, but the play is the same. You know, they are both, one has a media that would, you know, Trump has a media that loathes him. FDR has a media that loved him. So there's a lot of ripples in history going on here. So people say, why does it matter? This is why it's matter. This is why it matters. Open a newspaper. Turn on the news. It matters. You know, 80 years from now, if we're still here, the history books, if we still have books, will reveal what's really going on right now in this administration. History is a great, great equalizer. So it matters. And I wanted to talk to somebody, just texted me a question. One of my friends actually said, Steve, is it outlandish to think of people being poisoned? Well, it's not outlandish at all. And I did a little in the book. I lay out all of the opposition, the poisoning of opposition, all the way back to 331 BC. Every president since 1980 has had a food tester. Political poisoning started in actually peaked during the Italian Renaissance in the 14th century. Everyone from Rasputin to the Apostle John in the Bible has been poisoned. I mean, this is when you can't get to someone any other way. When their fortress is that thick and their weapons are that strong, you have to find another way in. So every U.S. today, everyone has a food tester. Everyone.
Well, the big thing, too, Steve, is remember back to the 60s, is the United States' main game number one was to poison Fidel Castro by any means necessary.
Absolutely. And that goes into Dr. Mary's Monkey. That goes into that book. And the nice gentleman that I can't remember his name that I met here in Dallas in November who wrote the book, Ed Haslin, who wrote Dr. Mary's Monkey. That was the program to do that.
And I interviewed one of the women recruited for the poisoning several times. And, you know, she was intelligent, but prevented from going to university, given more like a private education, so that she's off the books.
Judith Baker.
Exactly. And that way, you know, you can get in, you can get out, and you don't leave a trail. And that's the beautiful thing about poisoning. One of the other great poisonings that's not discussed was the 33-day Pope, John Paul I. So 14 days before they killed him, he was meeting with the Greek Patriarch. And generally, the Roman Pope drank first. So as a sign of whatever, or to sucker the guy into being a food taster, he drank first. He was pretty much dead before he hit the floor. And then they poisoned the Pope. So this is old hat. Remember that classic old movie, story, whatever, arsenic and old lace. You know, you had these sweet old ladies and, you know, their long line of former husbands, and, you know, they walk away and just say, well, it's too bad, but I've got all my inheritances. You know, this is the number one way to eliminate, and we're being poisoned as a species. You look at Roundup, you know, putting it in all the food, genetically modified stuff, putting our, you know, just margarine is a form of plastic, you know, that we take into our bodies that is denigrating our bodies. Or various vaccines that are loaded with God only knows what from Dr. Frankenstein's lab. So, you know, it's just, it's every day, everywhere. And then sometimes it's refined and given to a world leader or someone of import to take them out. And, you know, as we go through our history, that's what makes it so beautiful. Because history repeats. That's why you got to learn it. Why get suckered with the same trick, right? If you were walking down a street, there was a hole in the sidewalk, and you step in it, and you twisted your ankle, you wouldn't want to do it every day. So the history of stepping in that hole has got to be put into your brain and say, oh, step aside. Remember the old Dick Van Dyke show where he tripped over the Ottoman or something like that? And then, you know, whoops, you know, and then he dances around it? You got to know. Pattern recognition.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's the style is new, but the play is the same today in America, because I know this, you have a Canadian audience, and I know this is probably going to go around the world, but today in America, they have the presidential food safety team. And their job is to set up a secure zone so the president, not this, just this president, you know, all presidents in the past, back several years, can eat without complications. So if you're sending cupcakes to the president, they're throwing them out, okay? They're supervised making the food. There's a detail who is charged with the responsibility of that. And they have food screeners when people travel outside of the zone of the food taste of the presidential food safety team. Reagan, George H.W. Bush, President Clinton, the second President Bush, President Obama, they have all had this. And for good reason. The eighth president of Turkey's eighth president was poisoned with a glass of lemonade at the Bulgarian embassy in 1993. This is serious stuff, you know. And when you can take out the opposite, when you can change the world, by poisoning, don't you think that people are going to do it? If FDR had lived, there would have been, think about the Cold War and how it probably would have been avoided. Think about what happened because FDR died. And the person who did this to FDR was very desirous to position himself in the post-war world. And I don't want to give this away. I want to give it away really bad, but I want people to see the information in the book. I can sit here and tell you, oh, this, he did it and that one did it and this one involved, but I want people to read the information. It's important. So many, many times through World War II, there have been hits on the opposition leaders. I did some research. Hitler had at least 42 attempts on his life from 1933 to 1944. 42 attempts. That's incredible. That's incredible. And the Nazis were a lot of things, but they weren't stupid. They were not stupid people. I mean, Germany went from the depths of global depression to almost global domination. That's how smart they were. And they almost got Hitler 42 times. Erwin Rommel knew Hitler was out of his mind, and he was conspiring to help take him out with a coup. Erwin Rommel, on July 20th, 1944, was taken from his house and forced to take a cyanide capsule. You know, the poisoning and cyanide and all these things were big things. Hitler planned Operation Long Jump to assassinate the Allied leaders, Churchill, FDR, and Stalin, in 1943 at the Tehran Conference, and it was foiled by one of the Soviets. They were really, really after each other. Churchill had survived. This is one of the I laughed so hard when I uncovered this piece of history. You got to read this. Churchill, who's my sixth cousin, by the way, Churchill had survived dozens of attacks by luck. They were so, the Germans were so smart, they realized that Winston Churchill loved his chocolate. So they made a bomb and dressed it up as a chocolate bar. A thin little thing with a little wrapper, and they called it Peter's Chocolate, and it had gold foil on it. And it was supposed to make its way into his chambers, and he was supposed to slide the sleeve out, trigger the bomb, and blow his head off. And it almost worked. It almost worked. If it wasn't, if they weren't very, very on their toes, Winston Churchill wouldn't have made it. I mean, it was within 10 feet of working. They were really, really after each other. Stalin, probably one of the greatest mass murderers of all time. Stalin killed his first wife in 1907, only after 18 months of marriage, and he had those records destroyed. She was poisoned. His second wife became a student and started to question the way he was running things. He poisoned her. His doctor, Dmitry Pletnov, he was the head of the Kremlin hospital, and he used to massage Stalin every day, and is along with a few of the other members of the Politburo. He was murdered. He knew too much. They poisoned him. I mean, it was just, it's amazing when you go through the history that we were never told that really happened. At the Tehran Conference, I'll go back again, during a steak and potato dinner, FDR turned green, started sweating, and became violently ill. Harry Hopkins had to take him in his wheelchair out of the room. They were trying to poison each other all over the place. And it's really amazing how you have to know in this world how we got here. And to go backwards and look at the stems and the fragments that led one after the next to us getting here is a pretty interesting thing. And the fact that they were so, in some ways, in the 1940s. I mean, you're dealing with the era of the Waltons. You know, the doctor on Walton's Mountain was not going to cure what was wrong with FDR. He just didn't have technology. But you have to put yourself back in that time frame and why it is so important. You think about Warm Springs, Georgia, and the Little White House. FDR's favorite place because they had, well, Warm Springs. And it was a great soothing thing to his legs, who had been, you know, obviously crippled for years and years. And he loved the Warm Springs and the water, and he just loved the children in the area, and he would have barbecues with the children. He was actually a very nice man. I didn't tend to agree with him politically, but I admire him for a lot of things, and that's one of them. Here we have Secret Service must have been so lax Here we have two Russian spies who are painting this guy's painting, his portrait, in the room alone with him when he dies. One of those people was Nicholas Robbins, who was the photographer for Elizabeth Shumatov, who was the Russian painter. This guy, once I went down his rabbit hole, I just couldn't believe it, that they even let this person around FDR. But of course, information was not as plentiful as it is today. We live in a wonderful time of information. His real name was Nicholas Kubikinski, and he was Russian-born, and he came over to the United States, and his nationalization papers went from Kubikinski to Cobbins, and then about 5 years later, it went to Robbins. So here this person is. I'll get into Elizabeth Shumatov and the painter's background here in a second, but here this person is, a photographer assisting the other Russian in a room alone with our president, America's president, and he's living under an alias name. What's his intentions? What's he doing? They don't know. It's amazing that the greatest war in human history is going on, and they have these people who slip through the gaps. What are they doing to the president? No one knows. Are they on friendly terms? Are they on not friendly terms? Did they strangle the president? Could they have strangled the president? You know, I mean, it's incredible to look back and say, what the hell were we thinking? So that's his. I did a little digging into him, and he was the one who drove Elizabeth Shumatov to Warm Springs, Georgia, and. You know, I mean, he was also helped her drive the getaway car over Hill and Dale and this and that. She had to get out of there because they had to vacate everything because FDR's mistress was there. Eleanor Roosevelt was not there. So everyone had to leave when the president fell ill. So she didn't find out, she being Eleanor, that one of FDR's girlfriends was there. So they went on the escape tour over Hill and Dale, and it was quite something. And Nicholas Robbins was part of that escape. Now on to Elizabeth Shumatov, the painter. Google her and look at her paintings. She's probably one of the greatest painters in history. She was really, really talented. She painted FDR's first portrait years and years prior, and she had a real tough time with this one because he looked terrible. And she was the daughter of General Nicholas Ivanov. And he was a high officer in the Russian government. Her husband, Leo Shumatov, this is in from her biography, by the way, quote unquote, came to America with her husband, Leo, who was on a mission for the provincial government headed by Alexander Kresge. Here we go again with Russians around FDR, Russians around Trump. All of a sudden, this comes right into present day. It's incredible, really, that when something like this happens, you have a huge death, FDR's assassination, Elvis Presley dies, the president dies, everyone's scrambling for information, and it's all tightly held. No one can find anything. But when people stop looking, and only lunatics like me are looking, all of this flood of information comes out, and no one cares. It's amazing how we just go from caring passionately to just, you know, not giving a damn. It's amazing. But I have solved it. My book goes through motive, means, and opportunity. It takes all of the suspects through motive, means, and opportunity. And in the end, I will tell you who murdered him, how they murdered him, and how they got away with it. So I'll give you the website again. Don't buy this from Amazon. You're going to spend too much money on that, and I don't want anybody to spend any more money than they need to. Go to whomurderedbooks.com, whomurderedbooks.com. Pick yourself up a copy of Who Murdered FDR. I also have some other books there, and I'm soon going to be publishing Who Murdered Diana on Princess Diana. So I've been doing a lot of work and trying to wake a lot of people up. And, George, I hope I'm doing a good job.
Oh, indeed, indeed. A mind is a terrible thing to waste, so plug it in and use it. One person that, Eleanor's live-in lover, Lorena Hickok, when I was looking into her background, I found, she was writing for AP at the time, but was also writing on President Harding's death. She was on the funeral train, and I think she was even on his train as a reporter as well. And, maybe she was passionate about arsenic and old lace too, but there's just so many crooked characters. But then I always say all the time, God said we're all sinners. It's for us to sort it out, who does what to who and why. And anybody passing them off as a saint is a liar as well as some other kind of sinner. So, one of my things in investigations was, if you're in the gene pool, you're in the suspect pool. There's no way out.
That too. And, it's amazing if you take a look at, they stopped trying to engineer countries. Now they're trying to engineer the world. And I read a book called The Global Cage, and I forgot the author's name. It's a wonderful book.
Okay, well, it looks like we're coming up to the end. We thank you, Steve, for coming out. Very informative, a great way to tease people into thinking and looking at the past. The past is the future is the past. Paranormal science says it's all interconnected. We're fighting the war of the multiverse. History is important. Bless you.
Thanks for having me on.
We've all heard about antibiotics, but what about probiotics? Antibiotic means against life. Probiotic means pro-life. Antibiotics kill bacteria that are infectious and harmful to the body. They also kill the good bacteria, though, that are necessary for good health. Probiotics from Living Streams replaces the healthy balance of friendly bacteria and normalizes the digestive tract. Gastritis, ulcers, diarrheal disease is just a few of the problems people develop when the intestinal flora is out of balance. Living Streams probiotics create the healthy balance needed for good digestion, suppresses growth of pathogenic bacteria, and actually increases resistance to infection. Call the Power Hour, 877-817-9829. Order your Living Stream probiatics today. They're available in 2, 4, and 8-ounce bottles, and Living Streams probiotics comes with a money-back guarantee. Get your body back in balance with Living Streams probiotics today. 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Living Streams Probiotics. Everyone should be pro-life.
As you all know, everything begins with an idea. Ideas have helped shape the very world we live in. ThePowerMall.com began as an idea, allowing entrepreneurs and small business owners like yourself the opportunity to not only survive, but thrive in an era where corporations dominate. ThePowerMall.com is a small family-owned business who has partnered with companies you've come to rely on and trust over the years, like Strauss Heart Drops, North American Urban Spice, Miracle 2 Soaps, Vitamir, Numana Food Storage, to name just a few. Fight back against large corporations when you buy from thepowermall.com. Need to speak to a real person? Call Jay at thepowermall.com and receive superior customer service. Call 1-877-817-9829 right now. That number again is 1-877-817-9829. Support small businesses and buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.